Welcome to Leadership Decoded, a weekly podcast where through insights and interviews, I explore what good leadership looks like. I'm David McQueen, executive coach, speaker, and host of this podcast. My main aim is to keep the podcast long enough to cover the subject, but short enough to create interest. So sit back and enjoy this episode of Leadership Decoded. Today, I want to talk about toxic leadership. Sometimes we don't take enough time and we don't take enough energy to talk about toxic leadership and how it affects people, but it does. And I think it's really important that whilst we do focus on those areas of leadership that can really uplift people and make them realize how they can do it well, I think it's also important to recognize the bits that are negative as well. It's important to address this because not only do I want you as a listener to be aware of how it can and will affect you and your work and your life, but also to be cognizant of how it affects others, especially if you are that toxic leader. Yeah, I said it with my whole chest. You see, toxic leadership is defined as a detrimental style of leadership which looks at controlling others through fear, humiliation, bullying, and constant stress. It's divisive, and it reduces trust and well-being in teams and organizations across all sectors of working life and the community. Now, there's a lot of literature out there, and I'm not going to bombard you with it today. I'm not going to bombard you with links, but there's a lot of literature and research out there about toxic and toxic, dangerous leadership. We have seen stories in the press of political leaders who demonstrate this. You don't need to go too far to see who or understand who I'm talking about. We also see it in business, in the civic service, and also in religious leaders as well. And what I want to do today is not only highlight what it looks like, but also to highlight the impact, the negative impact it can have. But being the ever positive coach that I am, what I am going to end up with is how we can work around facing it and where possible coaching people away from such a style of leadership so people benefit rather than lose out under the leadership of toxic people. So let's start off by asking ourselves, what does toxic leadership look like? So my wife and I have worked over the years with a number of clients who have presented with a number of telltale traits that they have been under the leadership of someone who is toxic. To be transparent and fair, we have also had clients who have demonstrated these toxic leadership traits themselves and have needed to be challenged on their behavior and getting them to understand the impact of such behavior. So let's jump in to what examples of toxic leadership looks like. Number one, unrealistic expectations. Now, I don't know about you, but a lot of people have worked for bosses and leaders in whatever capacity, and they have been notorious for workplace bullying. These are individuals who absolutely lose their cool, and very often they are ones who have no boundaries around how they can deal with you as well. You know, I've known of clients who have had calls from their bosses at 6:30 in the morning before they've even kind of woken up, or very, very late at night. And there have been individuals who have sent emails, you know, when people have clocked off for the day and they're with their family and they're expecting them to be able to return and respond to it at night. Each to their own, but I've never ever understood the concept of always being on when you are working for someone. Okay, you know, there are going to be some exceptions if you're working for government departments or if you're working in a front and center health organization, and things need to be dealt with really urgently. But even then, I do believe if you have been required by a leader and they call you with unexpected demands at any time of the day or night with unrealistic expectations, that's a sign of toxic leadership. Part and parcel of this is making sure that when you are working with individuals that you do or you make it clear that you have your own boundaries. For example, I know that my work that I do, my phone goes on do not disturb from 10 o'clock at night until 7 o'clock in the morning. I don't care who you are, There is nothing that urgent in my business that needs to be done in that space of time. And the only people who can call me in that space of time when my do not disturb is on, is my family. So it's my wife, my two daughters, my best friend, and usually my dad. Anybody else outside of that, I'm not picking up the phone because it's important for me to be able to have that expectation. Likewise, I will do the same. And yes, you know, there are times where we can lapse, especially if we're on things like WhatsApp or Slack or Telegram or whatever kind of messaging system it is as well. Just being mindful of that as well is very, very important. But a lot of toxic leaders have unrealistic expectations. They expect you to pick up the phone whenever they call. They expect you to be able to respond to an email whenever they send it out. And part and parcel of being able to understand what a toxic leader looks like is being able to flag up when those things happen. How many times have you been in a situation where somebody who is supposed to be your leader has called you and expected you to be able to respond in a space of time when you are just basically having your own time? So that's the first one, unrealistic expectations. The second one I want to talk about is when you are being set up to fail. And toxic leadership has at its heart actors who realize that if they set unexpected expectations, as I spoke to you before, unrealistic expectations, they will also defend or design roles that are not reasonable. And I have seen people go into positions of senior leadership being really encouraged by chairpersons and other individuals to do a certain role, but they've been set up to fail. There is no way with the limited amount of resources that they have or with the emotional support. And when I talk about resources, I'm talking about finance as well as people, as well as processes, that it's just not possible to do a certain task. And what the person who is being led feels like is they're being really, really overwhelmed. And they're not understanding why, when they're putting in all these hours and doing all the work, they're not getting the results. Because very, very often, and it's a sign of toxic leadership, not just in terms of the individual, but the system as well, that things have been set up to fail. There's no way you're going to be able to achieve because it's not reasonable. There's no way you're going to do that without resources and without it being done. Without boundaries being done and set up very clearly. So that's the second one. You've been set up to fail. The third one is divide and rule. And one of the favorite tricks of toxic leaders or toxic leadership systems is to create tribes of people up against each other. Now, let's be really clear. Capitalism thrives on the back of competition. And whether we like it or not, this is a core competent of gains and moats and advantages and all the other parlance you'll hear when people are really trying to grow these big organizations. But what is strange, though, because competition is part and parcel of what we have in capitalism, and I think competition can be healthy. I don't think it has to be disruptive. I don't think it has to destroy other individuals. I think it's something that can really create the best out of us. But what is strange is that when leaders create that competition through divide and rule. And what do I mean by that? I'm talking about pitting colleagues against each other. So that rather than it being a healthy form of competition where you are aiming to get towards targets and seeing how you can benefit for the greater whole, there's a lot of negative messaging and narratives where you're just being told by another person that you're stupid and you're dumb. People are chosen and promoted as favorites over others. There are gossips. And there's a lot of inconsistencies around the way that people are treated. And, you know, even worse on top of that, people are promoted based not on competencies, but as a means of creating even more friction. People are allowed to get away with murder, as they say, for want of a better term. And that divide and rule is a really strong part, alongside the others that I'm mentioning, of toxic leaders. These don't stand as standalone points. Let me make that very clear. But when you pull them all together, where at least two, three or more of these are part of a combination, you realize that there is real toxic leadership at the heart of that leadership style. Another one is lack of control. And by now, some of you have listened to this and have probably recognized some of these traits in toxic leadership. Some of you may have even recognized it for yourself. But a big part of my leadership development arsenal, especially when I'm talking about resilience, focuses on impulse control. Now, to be clear, I'm not talking about the impulse control like the disorder, although that can play a role in this, but rather those traits of lack of control under pressure. Let me explain. Think about the leader who doesn't think before they fire off a series of very angry emails just because they are ticked off or pissed off with somebody who started up, you know, who wound them up at the beginning of the day, or a client that they don't specifically like. Think about the person who fires that off, and you probably have to end up picking up the pieces. Or the kind of leader who always jumps to conclusions rather than asking better questions. They make an assumption that they have the answer without gathering all the information necessary to make a healthy decision. And that person who has that lack of control, you, who are being led by them, you are quite nervous and you feel like you have to tiptoe on eggshells around them because they lack self-control. And they, when they do demonstrate behavior, it's usually unpredictable and explosive. I think you can see where I'm going with these now. But then there are even more insidious parts of toxic leadership as well. Can't get the word right, toxic leadership. Walk with me. I should say poisonous leadership, but toxic is shorter and most people know what I'm talking about. Anyway, one of the most evident but played down parts of toxic leadership comes around the lack of transparency around performance or pay rises in organizations. And this is why I find this whole concept of meritocracy so problematic. Let me explain. For those who've ever been on my workshops or heard me talk about meritocracy, it has its history in an essay written by the sociologist Michael Young. And it was a futuristic essay based in the workplace of 2033, where the author, Michael Young, was talking about those who are the ruling elite always telling individuals that all they need to do was work hard and they would have that merit and that would allow them to climb up the ladder and get paid and get rewarded. Again, the term meritocracy was a satirical term, but then it has been adopted ever since and used as something positive for a lot of organizations. And so people think that if you just work hard, you'll be able to get ahead. But the truth is that there are many other things in play. Understanding workplace politics, smart working, how you network. All these things are really important. And it's when we don't understand how these things work, often that's when toxic leadership can seep its way in. And this is why, for me, being able to understand that it's not just as straightforward as talking about meritocracy, or it's not just as straightforward as just talking about the person who's in there as the leader should be the person we trust. There are behaviors that will allow us to be able to trust those individuals. And when we're talking about performance and pay rises, this is one of the areas where you find that toxic leadership shows its head quite clearly. So a client of mine was really frustrated, having worked for years for a company and putting in the extra hours, because they believe hard work was the key to performance. And also having won awards on behalf of the company and being showed off by the company in press releases and in local kind of correspondence, they realized that they had missed out on a pay rise. They had had a conversation with a colleague who came in after them, who was junior, who didn't have the experience, who didn't do the hours and wasn't even as qualified, but that individual or the colleague had received a substantial pay rise. Upon further inquiry with their leader, they wanted clarity on why they had not received an equal process around pay and performance and a substantial pay rise in the same way, because they had hit all their targets, they had done everything that they were supposed to do, but it was not referred to or reflected in the actual pay. So they were told it was wrong to talk to other colleagues about pay. Now, let me make it really clear. You can talk to other colleagues about pay if you want to. No one can stop you from doing that. And all this BS about you can't talk to your other colleagues about pay. I wish more companies would be more transparent about that so we know exactly where we're coming from. Anyway, they were told that the additional bonus came from a specific pot of money that my client was not aware of. And so when my client spoke to the leader and said, well, they would have liked to have been made aware of this pot, because if that was something that was part of the performance, then surely they should know. They were told that they shouldn't be aggressive. So not only should they not talk to somebody else about money, but they were also told that they shouldn't be aggressive. Now, this is a frame that I've heard quite often, especially from talented individuals whose confidence is subsequently knocked and they begin to doubt themselves. I'm not just talking about imposter syndrome. I'm going even deeper, where they feel that their confidence has been knocked because no matter how hard they work, they're still not getting the reward. And it's not because they aren't good, but let's be honest, it's because toxic leadership has been allowed to thrive in that organization. It also shows up in disciplinaries or grievances where leaders are not impartial. where due process is not followed because the toxic leader is close friends with the individual who works in people, HR, compliance, or legal. I've never understood how crazy that can be, that you can take a leader to task with somebody who is pally with them. How are you supposed to be able to get impartiality when your leader is pally and best friends and drinking buddies and all the rest of it with somebody who you've taken a grievance with? There's something wrong with the process if that's the case. Now, don't get me wrong. Of course, you're always going to be friends with individuals in there. But what does that process look like if the lines between being very professional and very personal get blurred? Now, the thing is here, we are told, and many people are told, to quietly get on and don't fret. Don't worry about an issue that has been raised, just to kind of like get on with it and everything will be fine. Don't cause a stress. Don't cause any stir. Keep your head down. And sometimes they will even tell you that everybody knows that the leader behaves like this. And, you know, if I do speech marks, they are very well liked. They're a top revenue driver. They've been here for a long time. And they're in good cohorts with the chairman or the CEO. And they're not to be messed with. Again, any organization that has a set of values or principles or behaviors that surround integrity, that surround honesty and accountability, and all these lovely words we use very often to talk about company culture, if that doesn't align with the behavior that people are getting from somebody who behaves quite in a toxic manner, then what's the point of putting them up in the first place? Why would we have them? And so for me, that's what toxic leadership looks like. So I'd love to be able to jump to the next part. Let's talk about the impact. So as a coach, and also as a friend to many individuals who I have seen have the negative effects of being under the supervision of a toxic leader, be it people in business, government, civic organizations, schools, religions, and community groups, where one or more individuals have demonstrated these traits as leaders, it has been quite damaging. This control freakery, micromanagement, and aggressive leadership, which makes life hell for some, if not most people, but then who is able to talk about it if the culture allows it to happen? And the worst thing is when you have a small army of individuals who will champion them only because they're afraid, as opposed to believing that they are really doing something for the greater good of the organizations that they work for. A number of years ago, there was a report about the US Army. And I think they were saying something like up to 30% of the soldiers who were in there felt that they were being under the supervision of a toxic leader who was very abusive in terms of their language, in terms of the expectations. And yes, there was one thing in order to be able to follow the directive and trust somebody who will take you to the front line and you need to have that dependence on them. There's a second thing altogether to feel that you had to live with that toxic leadership all the time. We know of the really high profile cases of toxic leadership at organizations like WeWork and Uber and many other organizations that we can list ad infinitum. And in these organizations, one has to ask, why is it that individuals can have this kind of abusive behavior, even though there is a plethora of good books around leadership? There are coaches and facilitators and organizations who are forever working with companies and businesses and churches and mosques and civic organizations and all these community groups and wherever anybody needs to have this leadership, and yet you still have this really negative, toxic environment. I've had a couple of friends who have worked for government, and working in those governments, they've said to me, Dave, there are some things that we can't even repeat. And again, look, you know, there are going to be some people by obligation on the whatever act that they've had to sign that they can't give the details. But when they've come to you because they've been burnt out and they've had some real issue around how to deal with these toxic, or they've had real issues from toxic leadership leaders and they want to know how to deal with it, sometimes you have to step in. And again, without getting too much of the detail and exposing who these organizations are, it happens in government as well. I remember a number of years ago, when I was quite a religious person, when I had to address a senior spiritual leader, a pastor of a church who was known for inappropriate behavior, especially to women. And it was amazing how many people wanted to defend him. And they would use whatever it was to be able to do that. They would use scripture. They would say, I was an imposter, or, you know, who was I to be able to challenge the religious authority of this individual? And in many ways, I really understand how people do get afraid. There are times where it can be a reflection of the kind of family life that you were brought up in. It can be a reflection of the kind of expectations you have around religious or society, where you'll get pulled into, or you'll get drawn to, these individuals who are toxic. Because, you know, in many respects, people will feel that the person who's there deserves to be there. And they are the person who can take this organization or take whoever they're leading through this, you know, specific journey. So they allow, or they're willing to allow, a lot of trash to happen, just as long as they can get to a certain space, because they believe that's the person who will get them there. I remember a friend of mine shared a cartoon a little while back, and it was quite funny. I think it was in the New Yorker. And they were a group of sheep in a field, and there was a political poster of a wolf representing some kind of political leader. I think most of us can assume that we know who or what that kind of leader is, who that person is, depending on where you're listening to this. But the caption one on the wolf was, I will eat you. And the sheep were looking at this poster where it says, I will eat you. But the caption underneath the sheep was, you know, I love the fact that he says what he says. And it's crazy how there are people who will allow really toxic behavior because they want somebody to speak their mind, or, you know, speak on their behalf for some of the grievances that they have. But how does that really, really help? It doesn't help. And the challenge is that when you have toxic leaders, there's so much data out there that you reduce trust. Individuals are not going to trust each other in a team or in an organization. And how can you really say that you're truly leading individuals if you don't have their full trust? There's high staff turnover. In many instances where something is really toxic and individuals have got those things I spoke about earlier on, about, you know, the really unrealistic expectations, where lack of control, the divide and rule, where you've been set up to fail, there's no way that that stuff can last. And the trouble with a lot of toxic leadership is that sometimes it's only when it's too late for a lot of people that they realize it. Because those same toxic leaders and those same narcissistic leaders can be very charming. They can make you feel like you're on top of the world and you're the best thing since sliced bread, until you get on their bad side. And then it starts to hit in, and then you have that sense of self-doubt. But yes, reducing trust, high staff turnover, and low productivity. Productivity goes down. And on a personal level, I've seen people get stress, anxiety, varying forms of depression, and what have you. Now, there is a way out. And I think it's important that I flag this, because I wanted people to have a sense when they're listening to this of what that kind of toxic leadership looks like. And not so that you can go around blaming individuals, but just be able to understand how you navigate that. Because there are going to be individuals who are toxic, and some people will still want to work for them. But if we are well aware of our own boundaries, or the kind of organizations or people that we want to work for, it's better that we are aware of when these things flag up. What are these things that we have on this list that we're truly aware of that will make us go, I don't know if I can really work for that person. Or if I am working with that person, let me think about how I can lead up, or talk to someone else about being able to highlight and deal with this situation before it actually escalates. So I'll go to my third part now, where I talk about, you know, we know what it is, we know the impact that it's had, but third, what can we do in order to resolve or challenge toxic leadership? So the social psychologist Mark Van Vugt, V-U-G-T, I hope I pronounced that right, in his book, Naturally Selected, The Evolutionary Science of Leadership, shows how toxic leadership is an ever-present danger in all groups unless protective mechanisms are in place. Spoke about in the animal kingdom how groups like hyenas and lions and chimpanzees, there can be a lot of toxic leadership in there, but they don't have the same filter around or emotional intelligence around this in the same way that we do. In the animal, a lot of times in the animal kingdom, it's just dealt with aggression, whereas in humanity, we have the option to have a bit of a filter, whether that be through impulse control or emotional intelligence or whatever it is that we can use to put in place. So coming back to the point that he said that, you know, toxic leadership is ever present unless protective mechanisms are in place, how do we put these protective mechanisms in place? So for anybody who knows me, you'll know at the heart of what I believe is a real understanding of what the cultural DNA is of an organization. And if you have a culture that doesn't allow this to thrive in the first place, then the first instance that you have, or the first mechanism you have, is processes and policies and procedures and a narrative and behaviors that inform that culture, so that you don't allow that toxic leadership to thrive. Unfortunately, that's not enough. And sometimes you will need a coach or a guide or a mentor or somebody else as well who can work with that individual. And I'd like to talk about the approach that we specifically use. So in 2014, again in the Harvard Business Review, there was an article called Coaching the Toxic Leader by Manfred F.R. Ketz de Vries. And he gave some great points on how to identify and coach toxic leaders. He said that toxic leaders, especially executives, sometimes suffer from serious personality disorders, such as pathological narcissism, manic depression, passive aggressiveness, and emotional disconnection. Say that again, pathological narcissism, manic depression, passive aggressiveness, and emotional disconnection. And when these leaders reach positions of power, they create dysfunctional organizations in which everyone is miserable. Now, again, there are individuals who may work their way up, but there are sometimes individuals who may start, as I said, in some of the companies or a church or even in other civic or other business organizations where they may have started it themselves. And they exercise or they present with these serious disorders. In fact, it's really strange when you actually have a look at some of the major leaders of these really large, high-growth organizations, how many of them lean towards psychopathy or sociopathy. However, that said, an executive coach can help people combat these syndromes, provided the coach recognizes their signs and understands how to address them. And Manfred DeVries says, each pathology requires a different approach. Narcissists have fragile self-esteem, despite their apparent confidence, and react poorly to confrontation. And so coaches must build them up carefully. And in contrast, making manic depressives face reality in combination with therapy and medication is a key to getting them on track. And the goal with passive aggressives is to teach them to express anger, because it's all right, but in a healthy, direct manner. And exploring and describing emotional experiences help the disconnected relate better to others. So here he's talking about the fact is that a lot of people will just like to just discard a toxic leader. There are ways and means of being able to talk to individuals and take them on that journey as to how their behavior can be changed. How do we use specific tools? You know, whether it's a coach digging deep on things like appreciative inquiry or CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy or EBT or any one of the tools that they can have to really get under the skin of the way that leader makes choices, why they are not necessarily able to manage impulse control, things around emotional reaction and behavior. And we do things like journaling, really exploring how people can keep a track of their behavior, their emotional outbursts, their responses, and what triggers them. And what are the tools and mechanisms that can be in place to make sure that you don't respond to an email angrily, or you don't make an assumption, or you ask better questions. All these things can be put in place. But I will say as well, it does require for that leader to be able to want to change. Because you can't make people change without their permission. They've got to be on that journey where they actually want to change. And sometimes it might mean that that person who is toxic may need to be removed from the organization altogether. But for me, the main thing here is recognizing that, you know, because I see it so often, and I know my wife and I do it in our coaching practice, we see it so often where there are these egomaniacs, megalomaniacs, narcissists, and these individuals who are so aggressive but have no understanding of the impact. Sometimes they have an understanding and don't really care. Being able to challenge individuals to push back against that and say, this is not what good leadership looks like for me. Or, this is not what good leadership looks like for our organization or any kind of legacy we're trying to build. So whether you're working with a coach or whether you're working building your culture inwards or whether you're just thinking about yourself, how you'd be able to want to respond to leaders like this, it's important to really sit down and analyze and think about how you want that change. Because toxic leadership isn't good. And we have seen so many examples across time, whether again it's around leading a country or a government department or a business or in religion or even in families, where people have not been able to challenge that disruptive, abusive and aggressive behavior, that it can have a massive knock-on effect for the individuals who are affected by that leadership. So I hope that helped. I hope it gave a bit of an insight as to what toxic leadership is about and how we can actually see the signs, understand the impact it has, and then knowing that, think about how can we react, what are the resources that we go to, whether internally or externally, to be able to manage that. And being able to be strong enough to put your hand up and respond and challenge that kind of toxic behavior, full stop. So I want to thank you for listening to this week's episode. And I hope that it has helped someone in leadership to think about the importance of identifying and approaching the challenges around toxic leadership and how we can fix it. My desire is that the pointers were of help and that it's not just food for thought, but something that you can share with others too. So you can get this podcast on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, and all the other places where you get your, you know, choice of podcasts. And I'd love you to go ahead and share or comment and rate on whatever platform you get on this. For me, I'm not, if I'm really honest with you, I'm not that hung up on stars or big ratings. I just want people to be able to benefit from this and be able to apply it. But I appreciate both your time to listen and your feedback. And I look forward to having you tune into the next episode of Leadership Decoded. Until next week, stay safe and take care. Thank you.